Wednesday, 67 on Thursday. 57 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank Studios. Dave Mularkey's coming up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Mularkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mularkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone, and nice to have you with us on this Monday, Easter Monday. Hope you had a good holiday weekend, whether you were celebrating Easter or Passover, as both of those major feasts coincided this year. And if you still have some marshmallow peeps or hard-boiled eggs or chocolate bunnies left over, enjoy them for the next few days. It's a book talk day today on It's Your Turn. And as regular listeners know, we do this once a month on the fourth Monday of the month. And we do it in cooperation with the library system of Butler County. The various public libraries throughout the county take turns selecting a book. And then they come in and we talk about it. So book lovers really enjoy this program, this feature on our program. Today we welcome Karen Pierce, who's the director of the Slippery Rock Community Library. Karen, good to see you again.
It's great to be back here, Dave.
You know, I was looking at my records here, and I can't believe it was last July that we last talked. I thought it was much more recent. You're looking at me the same way?
I agree. I wouldn't have ever guessed. I was thinking it was sometime, you know, late autumn, but well, July,
let me check again and make sure. It was the Cuban Affair was the book that you had selected, which was a good book,
and
by
yeah,
the way.
July 18th, I think it was.
Yeah. Goodness gracious. Time flies, huh?
That does. Oh, my goodness.
Well, what book have you selected for our listeners to mull over this month?
A book by Christina Dodd. It's called Dead Girl Running. And I read the back of it, and I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but it seemed really good, so I was like, let's give this one a try.
Even by its back cover, huh?
Exactly.
Christina Dodd has written some bestsellers, New York Times bestsellers. She does, how would we say it, romantic suspense novels? Would you think that's accurate?
Yeah, suspense or thriller, romantic thriller.
Mm-hmm. And I had not read any of her before. I had not heard of her before.
Me
She's
either.
Apparently done a couple of other series, from what I read. And this particular novel, Dead Girl Running, is the first in a new series to be called the Cape Charade series. So she's one of those authors, and we see this a lot, where, I mean, you know, going all the way back to the Nero Wolfe novels, you know, or Agatha Christie, where there are recurring characters in, you know, a series of novels.
And where the setting is the same, yeah.
Exactly.
So that was Cape Charade is the town that they're located near.
Well, and the setting is on the Pacific coast of Washington State.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At a special resort.
An area that I've never been to. Have you ever been to the northwestern part of the country?
I haven't. My children have gone out there. They became enamored with the Twilight series all those many years ago. And my oldest son really enjoyed that. And so he took a trip out there with his dad. And they went to the town of Forks. And they went to the Ho Rainforest. And, you know, all that whole area in there.
Well, it's a wealthy part of the country these days. You know, they got they have nice climate. It's fairly moderate. They do get rain, but they've got forests, they've got lakes, they've got rivers, they've got Amazon headquarters. They've got Boeing aircraft. It's a pretty wealthy part of the country.
Yes, although then there's also, just like any part of the country, there is some poverty, and they've got some of the Indian reservations and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
To the best of my knowledge, there aren't really any vampires there, though.
Well, this particular setting is a fictional town, and it's a fictional resort in a rather remote area along the Pacific coast. I didn't think there were too many remote areas left along the Pacific coast.
I think a lot of the cliffs prevent there from being a lot of what we would consider to be beachfront developable property.
Mm-hmm. You know, so. And this is Washington State, so it's not as warm as Southern California, for example.
True.
So, I mean, it's not bad, but it's not subtropical like Southern California is.
They talk about some of the storms. It's cold and it's dark and it's mm-hmm. wet and it's just stinging rain because of the cold.
And the novel is set in January. At least it opens in January, which at the resort where most of the action takes place, the Yearning Sands Resort. Kind of a bizarre name for a resort, don't you think? Yearning Sands, what does that mean?
Maybe the people that come to the resort are looking for something. They're yearning for either a new start or a vacation, like a break from what's going on in their regular lives. They're yearning for something. But the sands part kind of confused me because there is no beach there, really.
Yeah.
Or that they talk about, anyway.
Well, obviously it's a fictional resort, and it's the off-season in January, so that plays into the plot, particularly for our lead character, our heroine, whose name is Kellen Adams.
Well, that's half
a lie. Or is it?
Yes, that's half a lie, according to the back of the book, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it actually starts out a little bit, the novel starts out a little bit like the old, remember the Columbo mystery series on TV with Peter Falk?
Yes.
The late Peter Falk playing Columbo in the rumpled trench coat.
Trench coat and the
and
scar.
It always started out with a murder. So that, you knew what happened at the very, very first 2 minutes, and then they spent the entire rest of the hour on Columbo, watching him figure out who did it, who done it. And in a way, this novel is the same way. It's kind of like a prologue or a first chapter, where a woman by the name of Patricia Carter.
Priscilla.
Priscilla, I'm sorry. I can't read my own notes here. Priscilla Carter meets her demise.
She came across some smugglers.
Mm-hmm.
She saw them hide a box. And I'm not giving anything away, And she took the box, thinking that, it wouldn't be that difficult. But then she herself went missing.
Mm-hmm. And she had been the assistant manager of this resort, the Yearning Sands Resort, disappeared. And so, obviously, the owners, the DeLuca family, had to hire a new assistant manager, and that's when Kellen Adams appears on the scene. She's the new assistant manager. By the way, we don't know anything about what happened when the novel itself begins to Priscilla Carter. It's just that she's missing.
Correct. Yeah. You find out later.
Nobody knows where she is. So let's talk a little bit about the owners, the DeLucas. It's an elderly couple, right?
Yeah, Annie and
Leo.
Leo, that's mm-hmm. it. And they seem to be still very, very involved for being elderly. Annie was in her 80s. And, but they're still a big part of the day-to-day operations of the resort.
I kind of found it funny that the owners of a vacation resort would go on vacation. It just, it struck me at the beginning. It says, what? You own a resort, for goodness sakes. What? shut the door, lock the door, and you're already there. You know, you're in heaven. But at any rate, that wouldn't make for much of a suspense novel, I guess.
Well, and I think maybe everybody needs to get away. They were yearning for a new for a break, and they went and visited family because they were celebrating, much as we're celebrating Passover and Easter right now. They were doing Hanukkah and Christmas together, mm-hmm. a delayed one, but they were meeting up with family and having a big family reunion.
So they head off on vacation, and Kellen Adams, who's new on the job, by the way, as assistant manager, she hasn't been there very long, but she's suddenly in charge because the owners are gone. And then she discovers the body.
Yes.
And it's on the property, right, where she mm-hmm. discovers Priscilla's body.
Well, and they're bringing a load of guests in, and the guests see the body as well, and they only see bones. And at that point, it's not really a body anymore because animals have gotten to it and stuff.
Yeah, it's very very decomposed. But do they know right away that it's Priscilla?
No, not right away. It's, if I remember correctly, they eventually identify her by a toe ring.
Yes, a toe ring.
So, for all of us that are getting ready for our summer, you know, our summer sandal feet.
Do women still wear those toe rings? I don't know. I have no idea.
They've always bothered me, so I don't wear them, but I don't know whether they're popular or not.
Maybe on the West Coast, huh?
Yes.
the coast of Washington. Well, at any rate, you can imagine a new assistant manager, our Kellen Adams, the body's found on the property, so she calls the DeLucas to say, I hate to tell you this while you're on vacation, but a body was discovered on the property here. What do we do?
So they call the local sheriff and police officer, and of course it's a quiet time of year, so there's a part-time police officer on duty.
Which was one of the, as I recall, one of the recurring characters from an earlier novel. I think I read, there are a couple of them who recur from previous works. But they also send their nephew.
Yeah, Max.
Maximilian.
Yes.
DeLuca. Oh, by the way, the head of security of the resort is also on vacation. What? All the top people take off at the same time.
Yeah. So, yeah, the owners leave, Leo and Annie, and then Mr. Gilfinan or something. I
pronounced it Gilfilan in my own head, but it's one of those long, complicated names that once I started pronouncing Gilfilan, then that's what I said the rest of the time I read it. Vincent Gilfilan.
Yes. And he left, and she was left with, well, you know, the resort couldn't be too difficult. They have a long-term guest who basically lives there.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had six, I'll call them older, ladies that are part of a mystery book club, and they go away once a year to this little resort, and they do a little mystery theater kind of thing. And I think one is a honeymooning couple. So there weren't too many people that had to be taken care of. It seemed like an awful lot of staff still left on the grounds for so few guests.
But everybody who's there, whether staff or guests, immediately becomes suspects in Kellen Adams' mind in the murder of Priscilla.
Well, once she figured out that this girl used to work there, then she thought, somebody else that used to work here is in trouble, is responsible.
Wouldn't she be horribly worried if, I mean, she's the new assistant manager and the previous assistant manager was murdered and her decomposed body is found, and you're thinking, I took over her job? I would imagine I'm next on the list, you know. That's what I would think, anyway.
Well, and then shortly after she finds the body and notifies the owners and so on and so forth, she realizes that there's an even bigger scandal going on, and that's with the smuggling. And
drug smuggling? No.
No, no. It's artwork. And so when she realizes that that's going on, now she's got two mysteries to solve.
Well, that's, I found that plausible because it's on the coast, after all, Pacific coast. But, you know, it's not like, you know, the harbor at Long Beach or San Diego or something like that, where it's very visible. It's a fairly remote area. So, okay, I can understand why smugglers would pick that area to, you know, try to unload or load up stolen. I mean, it's like artifacts, right? Valuable artwork and stuff like that?
Yeah, and the initial items that they were looking for, if I read the descriptions correctly, were, they seemed to be small little statues and sculptures, you know, stuff that would fit in your hand. Mm-hmm. You know, I think everything was sort of like in a little shoebox kind of thing. When Priscilla first found the box, it was, I mean, we're not talking huge paintings or something like that. We're talking little things that people would steal from tombs. They were tomb raider artifacts.
But very, very valuable.
Yes, yes, indeed. And so now she's got two mysteries going on.
Well, by the way, listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late, we're talking about Dead Girl Running. It's the newest novel by Christina Dodd. It's only about a year old. I checked the copyright. I have a paperback edition. Is that what you have?
That's what I have, too.
But, and this came out just last fall. But the hardcover was April of last year, so it's, you know, it's only a year old. Christina Dodd, the author, Dead Girl Running. The main character that we're talking about here, Kellen Adams, the new assistant manager at this resort, is... Well, she had a lot of secrets herself. Number one, she's not really Kellen Adams.
Right.
Explain that rather complicated situation.
Well, I will tell you, as I was first reading this story, I was actually a little bit scared for her. And I just thought, oh, this is kind of a frightening book. She's involved with, she's married to a man that is extraordinarily abusive. And her cousin comes to visit her and says, that's it. We are getting you out of this situation. This is not healthy for you. She goes in to tell her cousin's husband that she's taken her away, and the husband kills her.
He thinks that they look very much alike. They could pass as sisters.
Correct.
He actually thinks he's killing his wife.
Yes. And then he realizes, after he's killed this woman, he looks up through the window and realizes that his wife has seen him. She's up outside their house, like on some rocks, waiting for her cousin to come out. And he realizes that she has seen him kill her. But then the house blows up. And I'm guessing that that was initially his way of trying to hide the fact that he had murdered her. They would, if they found the body, it would be burned and it would just appear as though she had died in the fire. So then Kellen, who is not really Kellen, thinks that her husband is dead too.
In the explosion?
In the explosion. And
her name, by the way, was Cecilia.
Yes.
Same last name, Cecilia Adams, but...
And the cousins had grown up in the family together. You know, they were more like sisters, and they looked alike.
I was under the impression that the husband, his name was Gregory, was it Lakey? Is that the last?
I pronounced it Lick.
Lick?
But you could be right.
L-Y...
C-C-K-E.
Yeah. Oh, let's go with Lick. I like that. Gregory Lick was his name. I was under the impression that he committed suicide. That he wanted to take his own life.
Oh, I guess I hadn't thought about that.
You know, after he killed the person whom he thought was his wife.
And then so it would be a murder-suicide.
Like a murder-suicide thing.
I hadn't really considered that. I was just thinking that he wanted a way to cover his tracks, although he was very, very wealthy and probably could have figured out some way of doing that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I hadn't considered that he wanted to commit suicide.
So anyway, really, Cecilia decides she's got to get out. She fears for her life, even if her husband's dead. She fears that his family will come after her. And so she assumes the identity of her now dead cousin.
Mm-hmm.
It looks just like her. And she flees. She's, you know, gets out of Dodge, or in this case, gets out of Maine.
Yeah.
The state of Maine. And then this is the bizarre part to me. She loses a whole year of her life. She has no idea what happened. She ends up joining the Army.
She wakes up in the hospital and doesn't remember a thing and gets herself dressed and she walks down the street and she joins the Army. I was like, what?
Yeah, that was kind of bizarre to me too. One of many bizarre turns in this novel. And she ends up rising to the rank of captain and is deployed to Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And gets an honorable discharge. You know, obviously a very successful Army career.
She did well. She met a great group of people. You know, she worked well with her team. She was a good leader. And but during this whole time, she still is missing a year. She doesn't know what happened during that year. And she wakes up, and by the way, she has a gunshot wound to the head. It's a big scar where she was shot in the head.
Yeah, in fact, once you get through the prologue or the very first chapter of the book, Dead Girl Running, and then when it starts out telling her story, she says, I've got three confessions to make. I've got the scar of a gunshot wound on my forehead. Number two, I don't remember an entire year of my life. And number three, my name is Kellen Adams. But that's half a lie. So that's the hook, you know, to get you to start reading the novel proper once you get past the prologue. And it's a pretty good hook, I guess, you know.
Well, that's, yeah, I would have to say it's a good hook.
Maybe not the best of, you know, maybe not as good as it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Which is the hook at the beginning of A Tale of Two Cities. But nonetheless, it makes you want to at least turn a couple of more pages. Yeah. Dead Girl Running is the name of the book we're discussing, chosen by Karen Pierce, who's the director of the Slippery Rock Community Library, and we're discussing it on Book Talk here today. Let's take a break. We'll pick up our conversation right after this message. Be right back.
We know that you consider your pet to be a member of your family. What better way to reinforce that feeling than by joining us at the 13th Annual Blessing of the Animals Ceremony and Pet Fair. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler invites you to bring your pet to our special ceremony to bless and honor our animal companions. This year, it's on Sunday, May 5th from 1:30 to 4:30 indoors at the General Butler Vagabond Center just above the fire hall in Lindora. Each pet will be individually blessed by an ordained minister. Bring a photo, collar, or an urn of your deceased pet to be remembered and blessed. But please, your pet should be well socialized around other pets. They should be on a lead or in a carrier. There's no charge. An animal chiropractor, a variety of new vendors, and an animal rescue organization will be on hand. A caricaturist will be there to sketch you and your pet. We'll have a Chinese basket auction to benefit Canine Companions for Independence. Join us. It's a great event. Blessings of the Animals, Sunday, May 5th at 1:30, rain or shine, indoors at the Vagabond Center in Lindora.
Welcome back. It's the Easter Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Karen Pierce is here. She's the director of the Slippery Rock Community Library, where they have chosen the Christina Dodd suspense thriller Dead Girl Running as the book to be discussed on Book Talk here this month. By the way, Christina Dodd, D-O-D-D, if you're looking for this book in your community library or your bookstore. There are a whole bunch more characters. In fact, I don't know. I made my head swim. There are so many different characters in this book that I found it hard to keep track of who was who. Karen, did you find that as well?
I did, too. There were a couple of times that I had to go back and reread some things because I'd gotten myself confused.
Mm-hmm. And these are not... These are like secondary characters. They don't really seem to be that important, but you don't know when you start reading about them, you know.
That was the whole thing. I thought, you're still searching for the murderer.
Yeah. Is this a clue, you know? Is this a red herring? Who is this person?
Exactly. And there were several times that I went back and reread passages, and I thought, okay, I'll file that. And some of them did turn out to be unimportant, and others that I had glossed over turned out to be important.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when this Max DeLuca, the nephew of the owners, comes to the Yearning Sands Resort? What happens next?
At this point now, somebody has now started to come after Kellen. She gets a delivery of a fruit bowl that everybody is loving. Everybody's, you know, all the employees are saying how nice it is and how pretty and how the fruit is great. And all of a sudden, a snake crawls out of the bottom of the fruit bowl. And so now she's feeling targeted. And
this is kind of like in The Godfather when they send a fish wrapped in newspaper to somebody. Is that...
I'm guessing, yeah. You know, she's feeling, okay, somebody's out to get me now. And that's when she meets Max. And at first, she doesn't remember him. But as...
Why should she? Of course, she's not really who she says she is, so...
Right, so she's constantly guarding, keeping this secret. You know, she knows she doesn't remember a year. But she does remember that she's not who she says she is. So she doesn't remember this guy when he first comes to the resort. But then all of a sudden she realizes, wait a minute, I do know him.
Doesn't Max recognize her?
You would think right off the bat.
I would think.
Yeah. You know, but when they meet initially... it's not like he comes up and he's like, hey, how are you? Da 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 da. He doesn't give it away. It's not until he says later, you know, we have to talk. And she's like, about Philadelphia? And he says, yeah. And so then she's like, okay, I feel vindicated. I do remember this guy. I feel like it should have troubled her a little more. I would have been like, okay, we need to sit down and talk right now.
So she's starting to slowly get her memory back to figure out what happened in this missing year of her life?
I think it's, I don't know, I don't know much about amnesia, but I think it's starting to come back to her that little bits and pieces. I know that sometimes with amnesia, doctors will tell you that if you can find the right key to open up a locked door, then the memories will come back. And so she remembered Max in a dream. So maybe it's starting to come back. But she's still trying to figure out who killed Priscilla, who's the smuggler. Is her team involved? You know, this team on at the resort, many of the new employees are people that are ex-military that she has pulled in that were part of her group in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And she's like, are they involved? You know, because at this point there are, you know, everyone's a suspect.
Yeah. Yeah. She has some fellow veterans that she's hired at the resort. Talk a little bit about the scar of the gunshot on her forehead. She was shot in the head, right?
Yeah, and she says it's about a 1 inch, and I thought, that's about the length from the tip of your thumb to the first knuckle. I thought, that's a pretty big scar on your forehead.
When did this occur? When her husband tried to kill her, or in Afghanistan somewhere, or doesn't she know, or don't we know?
it happened prior to her being in the Army. They let her into the Army, even with this scar on her forehead. And it happened after she'd left her husband. So sometime between, she remembers being in New York, leaving New York, going to Philadelphia, somewhere between Philadelphia and waking up and joining the Army in that year that she lost is when she got the gunshot wound.
Mm-hmm. Now, I read some social media posts about this novel. Christina Dodd is apparently a pretty popular writer, even though I had not heard of her before. And there were more than one person who said she was shot in the head. You know, shouldn't her brains have been blown out, you know, in so many words? And then there were other people that said, well, that doesn't necessarily happen. Look at Gabby Giffords, the congresswoman out in Arizona, I think it was.
Oh, yes.
The senator, actually, she was a senator, I think. Anyway, she was shot in the head and survived. She wasn't able to continue her work in Washington, but survived. And there was that young, very young teenage girl in the Middle East.
Malala.
In Afghanistan. Yeah, what was the name?
Malala.
Yes, thank you. I couldn't remember. Who was shot in the head for going to school. You remember that?
I do.
A couple of years ago. And she survived. So there were other people that said, well, that, you know, it's not so preposterous that you could survive a gunshot wound to the head.
I suppose it's not too that you could survive it. But both Malala and Gabby Giffords, you said it yourself, Gabby was not able to go back and return to her job. And Malala has a speech impediment, and she is deaf in that ear, mm-hmm. In her left ear, and her face there's a misshapenness there, and so it causes her to smile oddly and stuff. Instead, Kellen wakes up, rips the IV out of her arm, gets dressed, and walks down and joins the Army.
Yeah, well, that brings us to something we haven't even mentioned before, and this really, I don't know, this was kind of a turnoff for me because I couldn't decide whether this was supposed to be, you know, a suspense novel, romantic suspense novel, or a superhero novel, because she realizes after she was shot in the head that she now has this ability to analyze information, to process information, to recall it at will, and you would think it would be just the opposite, you know, that her mental faculties would be harmed, perhaps irrevocably harmed by a gunshot in the middle of her forehead, for goodness sakes. And yet she now is almost a superhero, possessing, let me quote, the unique ability to store, process, and recall information.
Well, and she almost has them like on index cards in her brain, you know, and so she'll see a person and there's, you know, a half a dozen or a dozen little tidbits of information about them, and which was helpful as an audience member, you know, or as a reader of the book, because sometimes she would go over the list again, you know, and a person would walk into the room and she would be like, oh yeah, you know, she would recount the things that she remembered. It was helpful for me as a reader to be reacquainted with that character. But they also made jokes about her being a superhero. She calls herself Wonder Woman at one point. And, you know, there was a rumor going around the resort that her parents had been spies and she was a child, their only child bred by the government, you know, to be a superhero. She'd gotten her team out of some great battles.
Well, so this is where it started to lose me, because I'm thinking, I don't know how much more of this I can swallow, you know, suspend my disbelief. I did, you know, this seems to be the thing these days, these superhero or superheroine, you know, there's all kind of movies out about this stuff. And I thought, you know, really, I mean, there are people who have, in layperson's terminology, a photographic memory. Mm-hmm. You know, I had one of the guys that I went to school with was like that in college. You know, he never studied, did he? He'd read something once, and that was it. He knew it. So, I mean, that happens. But you're shot in the head. You get a gunshot wound in the head, and suddenly you're able to do this. That I just couldn't buy that.
Well, that end, you don't remember anything. And yet she was healthy enough that she could pass all of the tests that the Army requires for you to get into the Army. And I'm certain that there's a ton of veterans out there that would say that those physical tests and things aren't easy, you know, to get in there.
Even I think a scar, a big scar in the middle of her forehead would, in some cases, disqualify her. You know, they're very strict on that. Tattoos and stuff like that, invisible places.
Yeah, true. I hadn't even thought about that, but I was just thinking the physical ability to pass those tests, you know, to get in and things. And I thought she had to have been in some pretty awesome health. And, you know, so I found that difficult. And then also I found it difficult to think that you don't know the people, but she ended up becoming romantically involved with Max at the resort. And she gives him a big kiss, you know, and she's talking about how it felt right and da-da-da-da-da. And I thought, you don't know him. Why are you kissing him?
Yeah. Comes a little implausible.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised by that.
There's another character. You mentioned the government. There's a government agent. Goes by the name of Nils Brooks. Remember him? He poses as a writer, kind of a nebby, nerdy writer, but he says he's really a government agent investigating this smuggling ring that they think is going on.
Yeah. When she first meets him, she does that little index card thing in her brain, and she has him pegged as a bit of a nerd, and he's clutching his laptop to his chest, and because he doesn't want it to get rained on and things like that. And then she realizes that was definitely him acting, you know, after she knows the truth. But it was that was her initial reaction was, you know, nerd.
Mm-hmm. One of the other characters, and we can't go through them all because there are a whole lot, too many. A lot of folks would think I would be among them. But a character known as the librarian. Tell us about that, Karen Pierce.
Well, he or she is the head of the smuggling ring.
Mm-hmm.
They've chosen to call them the librarian. And when I didn't know that when I picked the book, but once I realized that, I've been finding that humorous.
since you are one, huh?
and none of the librarian friends that I have are smugglers.
I don't know what did they ever explain. If they did, I don't remember why they dubbed this person the librarian, the head of the smuggling ring. Was that ever explained? Just a nickname they picked out of nowhere? Or?
There must have been some reason.
I mean, we're talking about, I guess there were some rare books.
Yeah, and
I'm thinking, in addition to the other artifacts, maybe that was it, I don't know.
Maybe just knowing what the value of the items, you know, to research, because there were paintings, there were tomb artifacts from South America. There were rare books. There were... so it would have to be somebody that was good with research.
What did you think about the writing style of Christina Dodd? I found it rather cliched at many points. Maybe I've just read too many suspense novels. I'm not sure.
It was easy enough to read.
Well, it was a fast read, no question about that.
But I did find that, I think because of the amount of characters, like I said, I had to go back and reread. I'd confused people sometimes, and I thought, and sometimes their names were familiar, like the Vincent Gilf,
go file them.
Yeah, and then Nil Brooks, you know. So I was just I kind of got, you know, these people were similarly described as well. Many of them were tall and slender and, you know, that kind of thing. So I found it difficult to differentiate between some of them sometimes.
I couldn't help but think of the similarities, even from the title of this book, Dead Girl Running, to Girl Gone. Gillian Flynn from, 6 or 7 years ago now, and she wrote Girl Gone. It seems like there have been, I don't know, 4 or 5 books that have,
they have
not
the
exactly
term,
carbon copies, but very similar plot lines.
Well, and then The Girl on the Train. I was reading something not too long ago about the term, the word girl, being in a whole lot of titles.
Mm-hmm.
More than a dozen in the past 12 months. And
she seemed to me trying to capitalize on the popularity of Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl. In fact, Girl on the Train, it was actually selected by one of the other libraries in the county for a book talk, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And I read that and I said, well, the whole concept is misleading. It wasn't a girl on the train. It was a woman on the train.
Right.
And why would you call it girl? She wasn't a girl.
Well, and this isn't really a girl either.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a woman that was married and you know, I mean, a full-grown woman.
So don't you think it's rather a blatant attempt to capitalize on the whole girl gone phenomenon?
That's basically what this article was. They were saying that, you know, there's been more than a dozen in the past 12 months, and it's all based on, you know, like, it's not copycat books, but capitalizing on that term.
Well, I can see some people, if they're browsing in a library or browsing in a bookstore, you know, in an airport bookstore or something, and they see the title and say, oh, look, there's that book. Well, it really isn't that book that you're thinking you saw. It's something else that just has girl in the title.
Although Dead Woman Running, well, that doesn't have a bad, it doesn't roll off your tongue difficulty. But some of those, The Woman on the Train might not be, or I'm trying to think of Woman Gone, that doesn't sound right. So maybe the term girl, here on this title, at least Dead and Girl line up.
That's true. Now, what was a great Hitchcock film? Stranger on a Train, was that the title? I saw it a couple of years ago on Turner Classic Movie. Stranger on a Train, I think. That works, you know.
That's Stranger on a Train, yeah.
Not to be Girl on a Train.
Well, and
hard to beat Hitchcock for suspense, that's for sure.
And yeah, I agree with you.
We're talking about Dead Girl Running. As far as I know, it's the latest novel from Christina Daw. It almost has to be, since it was just published last year. It's fairly new. Are you aware of a demand at the Slippery Rock Library for her works? Do you have any others on the shelves up there, to your knowledge?
I don't think I actually have anything else by her. Hard to Kill is another book
I don't actually know any of her other titles, but I did read that she's written a couple of series, you know, before of
right.
Two or three or four novels that all take place at the same location with the same characters but different stories.
But it says that it's a New York Times best-selling author. So I'm hoping people will check out the book now that it'll be back on the shelf this afternoon.
Sometimes I wonder how they determine what's a New York Times best-selling author. It seems like you see that on about 95% of the covers of books, right? You're laughing, but it's true, right?
That's true.
When's the last time you picked up a paperback that didn't say New York Times bestselling author across the top?
I think there is probably an algorithm that is, and, you know, I don't know what, as far as New York Times bestselling author, how many authors are actually on the list?
Yeah.
You know, like, is it the top 50 authors?
Top 100? How long do you have to be on the list before you're on the list?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to explore that sometime. Dead Girl Running, we'll take a break. We'll come back and chat more with Karen Pierce, the director at Slippery Rock Community Library, back with more of It's Your Turn on WISR after this message.
You've seen the hit show Dancing with the Stars. Now see your favorite Butler celebrities hit the dance floor for an evening of fun and fundraising. On Saturday, May 11th, the Butler County Symphony invites you to join them for Dance with Butler County Celebrities at the Days Inn. See ballroom dance performances by Commissioners Kevin Buzo and Leslie Oshie, BC3 President Dr. Nick Newpower, and Butler County Ford's Kathy Glasgow, and many more. Tickets are available for the Saturday, May 11th event at the Symphony office or at Butler Symphony.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. It's Book Talk Day here on It's Your Turn, and we're chatting about Christina Dodd's latest suspense novel, Dead Girl Running, chosen by Slippery Rock Community Library. The director of Slippery Rock Community Library is with us here, Karen Pierce. You dug out during the break a little bit more information about why they used the term librarian for the kingpin of the smuggling ring that they were looking for.
To quote, it says, "The librarian controls a huge network of smugglers on both U.S. coasts. He has a reputation of loving books, collects all kinds of literature, antique books, scrolls, first editions, hieroglyphics." And then, not to be sexist, but the librarian seems female. And then the person replies, "The librarian killed Priscilla Carter." And then it gets on to the calling card of the killer.
Mm-hmm.
But so that answers our why they call it him or her the librarian.
A couple of other characters that you can mention. There was a person called Birdie. She was one of the colleagues of Kellen Adams in Afghanistan whenever they were in the army together.
And she ended up getting married to a police officer who was then killed in the line of duty. And so she is a grieving widow, but she is working with Kellen at the resort, trying to get a fresh start away from, you know, the sadness of losing her spouse.
Doesn't it seem a little funny that all these people would migrate to Washington State?
Actually, something that I have seen, they mentioned in the thing where two of the guys were having difficulty adapting to civilian life. And so I could imagine that they might actually go into what would appear to be a relatively secluded area, mm-hmm. quiet, not a lot of outside drama, and also be able to know that there's a secure job for them, and housing is provided, meals are provided, they have an income, and they still get to spend time with the people that they formed bonds with overseas. So I could see where that might be an attractive proposition for them.
Well, it's certainly true in real life that many returning veterans from the Middle East have a hard time readjusting to, you know, civilian society when they get back home.
And they were following Kellen, who was their captain overseas. You know, so she has that leadership skill and that demeanor. And then now she's also offering them this opportunity. So I could see where they might follow her.
There's some false narrative in this book, and that started to bug me because I've seen this pop up now over the last few years in a number of novels. Gone Girl is one of them, by the way, where, you know, you read half the book and then you find out that this character, this narrator that you've been reading is not telling the truth. And I just kind of want to throw up my hands and say, what? Why did I waste my time, you know?
How can I solve this mystery if you're not going to give me all the...
If you're not going to give me the facts. For example, our hard-to-pronounce head of security, Vincent Gilfillan, supposedly on vacation, but is he really?
No, she finds him sequestered in the hotel.
Yeah.
And
so you go through half the book, you think the guy's on vacation, and he's right there.
Well, and then to find that Annie and Leo know he's there. They knew they had set this up with him, trying to catch the smuggler that they knew was happening at the resort. And just nobody thought that they should tell this new assistant manager.
The our main character here, and that's Kellen Adams, fears that even though her husband is dead, she still fears that members of his family will come after her.
She did.
They blame her for his death? What's the deal there?
Well, that appears to be this extraordinarily dysfunctional family to begin with. And so not only was the husband very, very abusive, but his sister is not a nice person. And his mom is still alive and in the picture, and just an extraordinarily controlling matriarch of the family. Mm-hmm. So she's right to be concerned that his family would want retribution for their son's death.
And this is a family that has a very lucrative business. I mean, they have their own private jet and everything. You know?
Yeah, Lick Industries.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very, very wealthy and own a big mansion in Maine. And in fact, Kellen and her husband chose to actually live in the guest house because Kellen, well, she picked up on the fact that his sister didn't like her and she didn't want to go in and try to take over as, you know, a woman of the house, you know, the lady of the castle, if you will. And so she tried to play it low, but she was right to be afraid.
Does the author, Christina Dodd, does she ever go into any of the backstory as to how Cecilia / Kellen ended up with this bozo anyway? I mean, obviously an abusive husband, you know, why did she marry him?
Well, when they were dating, he wasn't abusive that way. And it wasn't until after they were married, although it was a very short courtship and quick marriage and whatnot. And I don't know that they discussed dates, but I don't think they were married for too long. Perhaps a year or so. I don't think it was too long. And I don't think that they had dated for very long prior to that. So,
did you think there were too many subplots, extraneous subplots in this novel? I did, but I'd be interested in your opinion.
I got lost sometimes. I thought, okay, so we mentioned that Kellen lived with her cousin and her aunt and uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And
in Maine, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's this whole you know, there's her parents being killed and being killed, and then she's living with her cousin and her aunt and uncle, and then she's living with this man, and then she's on the run, and all of these things, there's just enough information. It's almost like Christina Dodd was setting it up to write other stories.
Well, she's done that in the past. She's had other series, so.
That's true. You know, but each one of them could end up being its own book. And I just felt like there was a whole lot going on there. So then when they get to Yearning Sands, you know, you could theoretically have a book all about Annie and Leo. I mean, they go into more of Max's backstory and how he and Kellen knew one another back in Pennsylvania. And so, yeah, there was just a lot going on. And then Timo, is that how you pronounced it?
T-I-M-O.
Oh, was it T-I or T-E? I don't remember now. But I pronounced it in my head, Timo, as I was reading. And, you know, there's that whole story there. His mom is in prison. He's trying to support his little sister. Then there's Mitch and Adrian and Birdie and all of these people. And they all have a story, which is how they end up all being on her suspect list.
But I just found it could have used with some judicious editing, you know, not go into so much detail about all these various subplots, you know.
Well, and then like the little girl who leaves the door unlocked to let her boyfriend in. You know, just all these little stories. And is this an important detail? Is this not an important detail? You know. So, yeah, there were times that I thought this probably could have been a 200-page story.
Did they ever, our time begins to run short, do they ever reveal the killer of Priscilla Carter?
Yes. So I won't tell you who it is.
I wasn't going to ask. Oh. But I mean, they resolve it, right?
They do. They do. And they actually tie up all of the loose ends, I think. I mean, nothing major stands out in my head as being unresolved. But they do find out who killed her. And I was kind of surprised.
They also tie up the loose ends about the missing year, which I thought was just a little bit too smooth. You know, let's see. How can I make this twist at the end so unexpected that people are going to fall off their chair? And instead of doing that, I just kind of smiled and said, oh, really? You
know? I did too. And I thought, okay, well, it was an enjoyable, quick read. I would definitely say it started off, I felt that it was scary because of the abusive husband part. But once you got past that, I thought, this could be a good beach read.
Dead Girl Running is the name of the novel by Christina Dodd, D-O-D-D. Now, Karen Pierce has been with us from, she's the director at Slippery Rock Community Library. What's new there? You've got a new location, don't you?
We do.
Well, tell us about it.
Oh, my goodness. Dave, it is beautiful. We moved in and opened for business at the new library on September 1st, and I just could not be more pleased. It is bright and open, and we've got tons of shelves with new books. We've got all sorts of programming going on. You know, our old library was about the size of the studio. It was 283 square feet, and this is 2,440 square feet.
So are you in a different part of town or of the township?
Just up the street. We're still in Slippery Rock Borough, but the back part of our property actually runs along the property line between the borough and the township. Mm-hmm. But our old address was 316 North Main Street. We were in the park, And now we are in our very own standalone building at 465 North Main Street in Slippery Rock.
So you're not sharing digs with the Park Commission anymore?
Nope. We are on our very own spot of land. It's about 2 acres.
New building?
Brand new building.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yep, we built that, and it took us about 11 months to build. And but it was worth the wait. It's wonderful. I'm so pleased.
Well, check it out, you folks in the Slippery Rock area, or anywhere. If you're in Slippery Rock, you can stop in. You don't have to live in Slippery Rock to stop in. Brand new library building. And it's nice to see, because the northern half of Butler County over the years has been poorly served with libraries. There's not many people there. And it's more remote area, and it's nice to see that changing.
We had been a stop on the bookmobile many years ago. Mm-hmm. And when that ceased, gas was real expensive for a little while, then we determined that there was a desire as well as a need for library services, and hence the Slippery Rock Community Library was born. And that's been up and going since June 5th, 2005.
Can I give you my copy of Dead Girl Running, and you can put that on the truck, because it doesn't go to your library. It goes to somebody else. I'm not sure who.
Not a problem. Yeah, this copy belongs to Prospect, another northern tier library. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, our courier will bring it right back there.
Excellent. Well, we'll see you next time, Karen. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure. Always good to talk about books with you. Well, that wraps up our program for today. Enjoy the rest of your Easter Monday, and hope you can be with us tomorrow at 12:30 for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.